हरि ओम सह कृष्ण हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 50. Srila Prabhupada explores the relationship between mercy and qualification as purport. To verse 47. In one sense, absolute transcendental variegatedness is meant only for the devotees, not for others, because this distinct feature of transcendental variegatedness can be understood only by the mercy of the Supreme Lord and not by mental speculation or the ascending process. So that there is variety in the spiritual world that can actually only be understood because of the Lord's mercy. It's not that there's some material qualification that therefore you can understand. It's not there. One thinks, oh no, my intelligence, I can do all these things. But factually, one can't. It's just the way it functions. Yes.
Can we say that by our intelligence we can assess that it's there, but not how or
not what? Necessarily, okay. Because the thing is the general thought that people have is that if there is spiritual, then there it's just a general energy. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So the idea that there's variegatedness within spiritual means there's a bit, you know, they leave it a little bit, but, you know, the Mayavadis definitely try to root it all out. But others will, you know, leave a bit here and there. Like God's a person and we want to develop love for God, we want to serve God, we want to please God, but God has no form.
Yes.
You know, so that's the whole point is that one can't actually understand what is spiritual variegatedness without the God, without the Lord's mercy. Because otherwise, okay, what's heaven?
Nice.
It's a nice place, okay. Yeah. But what goes on there? What do you do all day?
Party.
Huh?
Party.
Party, okay.
Play the harp.
Play the harp, okay, yeah. Okay. You never hear of any saxophones. Okay, and then?
Play some more harp.
Yeah, so that's the whole point, is that spiritual variegatedness is not understood, what that means. You know, or just like, okay, how old are you in heaven?
Yeah, old.
That depends upon what time you took up God consciousness.
Yeah.
Huh?
Right?
You know, because if you started older because you were being a rat bag, then you're going to be older in this, you know, there.
Yes.
You understand? So there's all these funny things like that, you know. And then, okay, that's you. You're playing the harp all day. That's a bit, you know, sober. What do the kids do?
Oh, yeah. The kids. I always thought there wouldn't be any kids.
Yeah, okay. Different perspectives on heaven, okay. In heaven, there's no kids. And then some is, okay, there's no kids, but just playing harp. Others that there's, what do you call it? You know, there's no kids, but there's how many virgins?
63
virgins.
Okay.
Why 63, not 61 or 64, but 63?
I heard 72.
He heard 72. He's got a better connection. 72, okay. And why green embroidered couches? Why not blue embroidered or yellow embroidered? Or why not a variety of colors, you know, okay? You know, so that's it. That's as far as it goes. You know? And if you're a JW, then your kid gets to play with talking lions, tigers, and bears. Doesn't that make sense? It's a further variety that you, that's okay. Way beyond your perception. And kids like to, you know, play with the animals, but they should be able to talk.
Yeah. Oh, so, yeah. I know, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Now you got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, I got it.
See, the mercy of the Lord. That you're able to appreciate.
Yeah. But we can say that variety is here, so it must come from somewhere, so there must be some kind of...
Yes, but where does that kind of intelligence come from? As I pointed out, others don't even think about that at all.
And even if you explain it to them, still...
No, that's the whole point, is it makes no sense to them except by the Lord's mercy. That's the thing, is by the ascending process, no matter how smart you are, you cannot work out spiritual variety. You can figure out here, but you can't understand there.
So pride gets in the way of that.
Yeah, pride, the conditioning, it's just, it's not even just, if we say, oh, it's pride gets in the way, then it's something we're doing. So if we remove pride, I'll be able to understand.
Yeah.
It's actually, no, only by the Lord's mercy.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. But tendencies, the Lord doesn't give a whole lot of mercy to those who are proud.
<That's>
right? You know, when it comes to the inheritance factor, it's the meek that win. Right?
Okay.
Yeah. It is said that one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead when one is even slightly favored by Him. Otherwise, without His mercy, a man can speculate for thousands of years and not understand what is actually the absolute truth. And so, just even at, what to say, a slightly favored. So if someone takes up Krishna consciousness with faith, he's slightly favored. Right? So therefore, they can appreciate God's a person. They may not understand the full details, but at least that principle is there. Right?
Yes.
So it's This mercy can be perceived by the devotee when he is completely free from contamination. Yeah. It is stated, therefore, that only when all contamination is rooted out and the devotee is completely detached from material attractions can he receive the mercy of the Lord. So we're talking about here is meaning that full mercy. So here, a slight amount of mercy you can appreciate. The Lord is a person, the spiritual realm, the variegatedness, but that's where only understanding the situation. But actually the main feature is the experience that's gained. Right? So we can get a glimpse of Sat, but then the Chit and Ananda, that's generally where the problem is. Okay, because in Chit, okay, we understand sitting down, chanting our japa, you know, a kirtan, prashad, like that, you know, doing some service, you know, for the Dham or picking tulsi, worshipping the deity. But outside of that, we don't see the spiritual. You understand? And so therefore, then it's limited on our appreciation of Ananda. But as we root out these material contamination and material attachment, then that can be replaced with that the Lord's mercy where we appreciate these things. Does that make sense? So here, it's just like when we say bhakti, we mean prema. But everything before that's leading to it. So then also when we say receive the mercy, we mean that process of coming to. So, full mercy, that's considered mercy. So, the great sages continued. Persons who are very expert and most intelligent in understanding things as they are, engage in hearing narrations of the auspicious activities and pastimes of the Lord, which are worth chanting and hearing. Such persons do not care even for the highest material benediction, namely liberation, to say nothing of other less important benedictions like the material happiness of the heavenly kingdom. O Lord, we pray that you let us be born in any hellish condition of life, just as long as our hearts and minds are always engaged in the service of your lotus feet. Our words are made beautiful by speaking of your activities, just as tulsi leaves are beautified when offered unto your lotus feet. And as long as our ears are always filled with the chanting of your transcendental qualities. 48-59. So here the Kumaras are praying that they may be always able to hear and chant about the Lord. They'd be able to render this service. Right? And Jayad Vijayad asked that they could always remember the Lord. Right? So this is nice in this, is that here is the hearing chanting naturally because remembering was there, but not in this form, right? They were always remembering before as Paramatma, but now as Bhagavan. So now they want to be able to hear and chant. So the doorkeepers, now just by only thinking about remembering the Lord, that they won't forget the Lord, because naturally that's all-encompassing. But then that fits their position, because as demons, they never forgot the Lord. But they were not actually in the habit of glorifying the Lord. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Though we see by the points that that Hiranyaksha will make to Varahadev, that Sridhar Swami is showing from the, you know, derivative of Sanskrit that he's actually glorifying the Lord.
Yeah. Like, same as Shishupal.
Yeah, same as Shishupal. Yeah, because the same place. So they are always glorifying. But yeah, the main promises are always remembering. Right? And that remembrance is, you know, not necessarily, you know, in envy. But that's what then makes a good fight. Right? You know? Two people are too, you know, buddy-buddy. It's really hard to fight.
Yeah.
By dint of the Lord's presence in the Kumara's realization that it had been proper for them to curse the doorkeepers, in spite of the offense that had been committed, Jiva Goswami comments in verse 49, quote, "The Kumaras confess their own offense and pray for pure devotional service. They say, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, before we did not commit any sin. Before now we did not commit any sin. But now that two of your devotees are cursed on our account, we have committed all sins." Because right, that's the highest. Anything done against the devotees, that's the highest. Because right? When it says killing a Brahmin, then that means, because devotees are naturally Brahmins, right? Maybe not occupationally, but that's not the person. Does that make sense? The occupation is an auxiliary to the person. But them, their values, their lifestyle, their dedication to God consciousness, that's the person. That's Brahminical. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So whether you're physically killing someone or, you know, insulting or like this, that's in that category. So there isn't any other sin greater than this. So therefore they can say, by this sin we have committed all sins. So, yeah. Therefore let us be born in any hellish conditions of life, you know, whatever is suitable for what we've done. But let us always be able to hear and chant your glories. In his purport to verse 49, Srila Prabhupada describes what qualities characterize those who have rejected the impersonal as the highest realization and who understand Bhagavan as the supreme. The four sages now offer their humility to the personality of Godhead because of their having been haughty in cursing two other devotees of the Lord. Right, so said two other devotees, by using the term others, now you can understand that Jai and Vijay have now become devotees. Right? Like that. The Kumaras.
Yeah,
Jai and Vijay already were.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it means, in other words, in this process, then the Kumaras were, now they become, and Jai and Vijay, who are, now are not. Right? You know, that's interesting.
Yes.
Jaya and Vijaya, the two doorkeepers who checked them from entering the Vaikuntha planet, were certainly offenders. But as Vaishnavas, the four sages should not have cursed them in anger. After the incident, they became conscious that they had done wrong by cursing the devotees. So someone's done something wrong, but that doesn't mean that that's how devotees function. Because as we see from the sixth canto, then the Vaikuntha Vasis are pointing out that this process of prayaschitta is unnecessary for the devotee, because by chanting the Lord's name, one is already freed from all contamination. There is no process of prayaschitta that can attain anywhere near that range of purification. It just doesn't happen. Right? So it's not necessary. Therefore, it's not necessary that this is done, because this is not specifically for their benefit. It will, by the Lord's grace, become for their benefit. But it's not like Narad Muni cursing the Nalakuvera and Manigriva, because they are going to now come in contact with the Lord after spending some time contemplating, you know, their impropriety of their action. Now they're going to meet the Lord face to face. So it's slightly different. But here it's just removing them from this position because they don't belong here. But it didn't include something that would generate benefit for them in the way of devotional service. Does this make sense? Yeah. But it was appropriate for whatever's going on, because this is how the Kumaras have been functioning before. Right? Because they're working within the material and the sphere of Brahman. Right? So they had never actually functioned within the devotional. And now they've begun.
So can we say that Pujai and Vijay, only because the Lord wanted this fasting to happen, that's why it happened? Because
yes.
Otherwise there was no point for them, from devotional point of view, to endure these three lives as demons and then just...
No, it has to be that. Because the point is the Lord knows everything. How is it he showed up just at this moment? Why couldn't he have showed up just a moment earlier? You know, just as they're becoming angry, if the Lord had come out then everything would have been nice. They would have then seen the Lord, forgotten all about it, Jai Vijay. They would have, they would say, what's happening here? And then the same points would have come out. You know, we were going to curse them, you know, because of this. And they would say, oh, but we didn't understand their greatness and, you know, all that kind of thing. And then all the same instructions would have been gained. So on that platform, it would have been fine. But then the Lord wouldn't get an opportunity to fight. Right? So therefore, you show up just a moment later, and then, you know. So the same instructions there, the same benefits there, but then you have these pastimes. So, yes?
Maharaj, so this concept of mercy is very much important for the devotees, because sometimes something happens to us, and then we don't know why it has happened, and then people come and say, yeah, well, this is like Lord's mercy. But for us, it doesn't look like. And after some time, we can understand, but how should we accept the Lord's mercy? Because in different circumstances, it appears to be different.
Yes. So, I mean, it's basically, we'll generally categorize it as mercy when it's something nice.
Pleasant.
Yeah, pleasant, good, you know, like that, you know. And when it's not nice, then we won't put it that way. The term is just to make us think. Otherwise, we tend to, if something's going wrong, then, you know, we start to look, you know, why is this going wrong? Who's at fault? Because it's generally not us. You know, or if we do have it as us, then it's just we have that tendency to like to, you know, feel bad due to, you know, lack of security. But either one of those are mundane. So the idea of when you say it's Krishna's mercy, which it is, of course, but the point is not about that. This is what mercy looks like. But it's so that we think, okay, you know, we've done something wrong. Krishna's related, and then they say some reaction is there, but by the Lord's mercy, it's only what it is. As a devotee, then generally we see that things may be bad, but they're less than what they would be. Does that make sense? Because we don't generally consider things in a big, like Prabhupada says, should have had your arm cut off, but you only get a little, you know, cut on your finger. So like that. So you know, if it's more than that, then if you got your arm cut off, it should have been worse than your head. You know, and then you can say, no, but what if you get your head cut off? Then you should have had your head cut off for, you know, 10 lifetimes. So, you know, so it's only one lifetime. So it's like that. It's always reduced, because for the devotee, it's only enough so that one thinks. That's all. Because for the materialist, they don't think. They just, you know, it's not really an option. You know, it's just not popular, and it's therefore is not a.
Can we say that actually the reaction is enough to make them think? It just takes a little longer before they start thinking.
No, but what do they think? Where do they go? Because if it doesn't have the Lord's mercy, it won't turn towards God consciousness. But for the devotee, then in the contemplation, it will turn to Krishna. So that means that it's turned to Krishna. That's where the mercy is. Because that's the point. Remembering the Lord, that's the mercy. Right? Does that make sense? Because in the spiritual world, then the variety in the pastimes is based on the Lord's pleasure. While here, the variety in our pastimes is generally based on our pleasure. So depending upon what was our pleasure, then we get a different result. Right? Because generally when we say the term, what is your pleasure, it generally means something sinful.
It's the term guilty pleasures.
Huh? Oh, yeah, there's the guilty pleasures, yeah. you understand?
Yeah.
Yes.
One wanders through great suffering, or one comes to the end of his life, even being an atheist, he might even turn to God and pray to God and ask for mercy.
Yes, but to actually understand God and all that, that's another thing. So this is there. There's that surrender, so that's good. That will definitely get him some benefit, that he even at some point surrendered to the Lord. But he's only surrendered to free him from the situation. He's not surrendering to actually know God. So therefore, he's just in Artarti. You know? But that will get him benefits. So next life, then he'll have more of an opportunity to have that surrender whenever he has a problem. And then after, you know, many, many lifetimes, he may actually really want to know what's going on. But that's only when one comes in contact with the devotees. So people actually want to know what's happening. That's because they've contacted devotees. They don't know it because for a materialist, the concept of agyata sukriti, that doesn't mean anything to them. You know, they went down the street, they saw some devotees. Like that, you know, they bought a book, it's sitting there on the shelf. Like that, you know, they took some prasad. For them, it's just, you know, it's not devotional service. So they're not actually understanding that accumulation of the Lord's mercy. So then when they do actually, that deepens to the point it develops into faith, then generally the tendency is, yes, well, I was a seeker of the truth, that's why I came to Krishna consciousness. But actually, no, that has nothing to do with it. That you are a seeker of the truth, that's only because you had contacted Krishna consciousness before. Right? So when there's some symptom that there's an interest, then Krishna gives the opportunity. Right? So that we have to show that there's an interest, but then it's actually by the Lord's arrangement. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I was just thinking of someone who come to meet a devotee and get a book and not know what it's all about and just put the book in his house and then 10 years later he thinks, well, let me read that book. And then
yeah, like that.
That would be the Krishna's mercy.
Yeah, no, the whole thing, just that he met devotees, there must have been some interest. But that's the thing, as much of the time for the materialist, there is nothing to generate that interest. That's why the devotees have to go out in an obvious way as devotional service, are exposing people to devotional service. Otherwise, the devotees aren't obvious that they don't know it's something to do with spirituality. Where's the benefit? You know what I'm saying? If a devotee's dressed as a karmi, walks down the street, you see them, you just think they're another karmi. How is that any benefit? Right? Does that make sense? Right? But if they're walking down the street with their bed sheets on, right? Then you know something's different here. There's something spiritual. Now what do you think about? Do you know, interest, not interest, this, that, what's going on? Does that make sense? Now if we want to not disturb them, the demoniac mentality is always disturbed. So there's no use trying to please them. Why would you want to please the demoniac mentality? But for the innocent, it's kind of like, who walks around in bed sheets? Who are these guys? They are going to get benefit because there's inquisitiveness. So we should be working for the benefit of the innocent, not trying to fit in with the demons. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, yeah. So, okay. Yes. Here was. Yes.
This feeling of insecurity when something negative happens, when does it disappear?
When we see ourselves as servant of Krishna. You know, when we identify with that. Because, see, the conditioning, that's what we're worried about. Insecurity means we're worried about losing the conditioning. Does that make sense? There's some adjustment in the conditioning that we're not sure of what that's going to result in. So that's what we are worried about. So the fear comes up from worry about loss of something that's not us. Right? But when we identify as the soul, then there is no loss because changing bodies is not a big deal. Just like you walk from one room to the next and it's not, I've lost the living room. Now where's the living room? Will I ever get the living room back? You know, am I going to be stuck in the hallway forever? You know, you don't worry about that. I'm sure if you go down and visit the insane asylum, there might be someone who has this mentality. But in general, it's not a... Does that make sense? So for the devotee, they just know that then they'll be with Krishna in the spiritual world. And if not, even if they're here, then they'll still just devotees, they can carry on their service, so nothing's lost. So they don't worry about it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Maharaj, we see in the case of Savari Muni, and how he curses Garudadev, and that's why he falls down from his position. So it's a little different here with the Kumaras cursing Jaya and Vijay, and the reaction is somehow different.
What's the doubt? I mean, in other words, is there a point to be made, or it's just that you found two things that look different, you just want to explore that difference just because it's interesting, like reading an encyclopedia or something?
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
Both of them got angry with the pure devotee.
Go ahead.
So it's the same situation, sort of, at least it seems to me that it's the same situation, but the reaction turned out to be different. Savari Muni fell down from his position because...
No, but the point is Garuda supposed to eat snakes? Is that his food? So what is he doing wrong? Right? Now, the doorkeepers, they're supposed to, you know, stop people at the gate. But they didn't do it properly. They weren't discerning who's qualified, who's not. Right? So in other words, one is... He's getting cursed for performing his duty, so that's not right. So Bari Muni falls down, right? The doorkeepers, they're supposed to, you know, be, you know, how you say, protecting the door, but they're not using proper discrimination, so they're wrong. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. After the incident, they became conscious that they had done wrong by cursing the devotees of the Lord. And they prayed to the Lord that even in the hellish conditions of life, their mind might not be distracted from the engagement of service to the lotus feet of Lord Narayana. Those who are devotees of the Lord are not afraid of any condition of life, provided there is constant engagement in the service of the Lord. It is said of the Narayana Para, or those who are devotees of Narayana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Na kutaschana bhibhyati. Footnote 6. Devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:17-18. So, in being in whatever situation you're in, it's about serving the Lord. It doesn't matter the situation, you know, because we'll sometimes be worried about it because we want an efficiency in the performance of our service, because we're attached to that element of efficiency, because we identify, I am the doer, I am intelligent, I'm applying it to the situation, I'm getting my work done. Therefore, the situations have more meaning to us. But here it's pointing out that these great personalities, it doesn't matter, because whatever the condition, whether it's nice or not, they're going to serve. Does that make sense? So it doesn't matter. It's just like, let's say, you get your favorite food. Okay, if you're in a very nice, pleasant place, that's good. But if you're not necessarily in a nice place, you know, it also works out. You know, if you're sitting on the subway, you can also eat it. You're sitting at home, you can eat it. You're sitting in a fancy restaurant, you can eat it. You understand? So that doesn't matter. It's because it's about the eating, not about Yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there also an element of just not being attached to a specific result of your activities? That we may be attached to, I can get an external result if the field I'm working with is like this or like that.
But what's the importance of that result?
That would strengthen my identity as a devotee, because...
Why would it strengthen your identity as a devotee?
But that's the illusion.
Oh, okay. It means it's this performance of service that's the devotee, not the necessary gaining of results.
Yeah, but that's our problem in our situation now.
Yeah, that's what we were discussing yesterday. We think it because of material qualification, that is our spiritual qualification. Right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like Hanuman and the monkeys are thinking they're doing the big service because they're bringing mountaintops, while the squirrel and the spider, they're just kicking little grains of dust. So that's not, no, but it's the endeavor. Mm-hmm. Point, you have a big body, you move something big. You know, if the monkeys were all sitting down, the hands and knees, and they're, you know, moving grains of sand like that, you know, that would be a little freaky. You know? More freaky is if the squirrel is walking along carrying a mountain. You know, the mountain's going by, you have to look underneath. Yeah. You know, so, yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It was talking about the children when you say they are not affected by the situation.
Yes. They're not, means their absorption in devotional service is not affected by the situation. It doesn't mean that they don't make adjustments in how the service will be performed because the situation. It's not that the devotee's driving his car down the road because he's driving to the temple, so then when the truck stops in front of him, he just drives straight through the truck, comes out the other side, keeps going to the temple. You know, he's driving down the street, all the red lights turn to green, you know, he's like that, you know, like that. It's we're not talking like that.
Still there is some kind of adjustment, like rejecting and accepting.
But that's just dealing what you're dealing with. Right? Does that make sense? That's the instruments of the service. It's not the service itself. Does that make sense? Okay, let's try that. Yeah, okay. The boy gives the girl a flower. Is it about the flower?
No.
No? You're sure?
I'm pretty sure.
You're pretty sure. How about if he's giving a diamond ring? Now that's about the diamond ring. It's not about the diamond. It's about the security in the future that you can sell the diamond. Okay, now there. That's exchange of affection. So the flower is used as the medium of exchange. So it's not about the flower. Right? Like that. Yes. So, therefore, then... when you're performing the service, it's not about the externals that's there. It's about the mood of service. So that you have to make adjustments. Then that's just the way things work. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's not a change in the service. Because the service is the attitude. Then there's the expression of the service. So expressions may change.
Yes, but
if I would be in hell trying to serve Krishna, I'm sure I would be very disturbed about many things. What are these many things you'd be disturbed about? Means that you're wishing that the Yamadutas had taken a bath, or
the weather.
It's nice sun out, you know. You know, so, of course, the copper landscape is a bit of a problem.
Yeah, it would be like more struggle.
But what has struggle got to do with it? Why are you counting struggle as bad?
Because it's kind of...
Okay, let's say like this. Okay, you're inviting someone over that's very important to you, okay,
yeah,
for dinner. Okay, so what are you going to do for dinner? Are you going to, just as they walk in the door, then push the button on the microwave and then you know,
that's it.
And that's it, you know. And then when they get out, then you stick one, you know, one down for them, one for you, or just put it on the counter, get yours out, and say it's over there. You know, is that how it's going to work? That's no trouble. You know, but spending hours planning, going to the market, buying things, preparing, all that's a lot of trouble. So why are you doing it? Because as in this example, then you're saying that trouble is what you want to avoid. Because if there's trouble, then you can't think of the Lord. You know, it's just like this. I can only think of my best friend coming over for dinner if there's no trouble and all I have to do is push the microwave button. You know? And even if I was really pushing it, that I had to set it to 2 minutes. You know? Like that. I should actually do like, you know, his friend does, put it on eternity, and then just, you know.
Open and close.
Open and close. You know, you don't even have to worry about it yet. And then you have to dial the number, you know, you have to, you know, wait, this one's only 2 minutes, you know? So it's like, you know. Distraction, but so that's what it is. Going to the market, distraction, all the different things. You know, you looked at the thing, they don't have what you want. You have to go find a person. Do you have any of this? They'll go check in the back. You know, they don't have. You have to go to another store. You know, another store means the driving, the traffic, the parking. You know, walking in and out of your car, opening, closing doors. You know, I mean, it's, you know, all this is so much. Hundreds of times greater than pushing the button, otherwise, as we pointed out here, just opening and closing the door. You don't even have the button, you have it permanently on. So you just leave the door open. When you put something in, when you close it, it goes on. Now that's like perfection.
That's cooking.
Yeah, that's cooking. Yeah. Okay, Hari Mal. Yes. See, by Krishna's mercy. You understand? So that's the whole point. That's what the Kumaras are saying here. It doesn't matter where you are, because it's for Krishna, then it's not a problem. If you're not identifying with the body, what does it matter? You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, your purse. Okay? Does it really matter if they've just been put down on some nice lounge chair, you know, on, you know, some fancy beach somewhere, or if they've just been put, you know, in the back seat of a taxi? So that's the whole point. You know what I'm saying? Now, if you identify with that purse, you know, that purse just cost you, you know, how you say, $1,200. You know, and you had to go out of your way, you've been planning for a long time, and besides, when you got there, there was only one piece left, and you had to fight over it, and somehow or another, you won. Like that, you know? That's the advantage to pointy shoes. Right? Okay? Okay, so, now, is there going to be a difference for you to put it down, you know, in a nicer place or not nicer place?
Yeah, if I'm a fence for you.
So that's your answer to your previous question. You're attached to the body, then these things are going to be a problem. If you're not attached, it's about the Lord, then what does it matter? You just function in the situation. Right? So the point is putting the purse down in a nice place or not nice place, what's the real consideration? The purse. Right? But now let's say that purse was given to you by somebody and you really liked, but then something went wrong in the relationship. Then you might not put it down in a nice place. So it's not about the purse. It's about your attachment to the purse and what the purse means to you. So when all that's given up, then you'll just deal with everything according to how it needs to be dealt with. Does that make sense? Yeah. You didn't get the purse example. What about a crowbar?
Back to the point of the spiders and the monkeys.
Yeah, the eensy weensy spider, whatever. Okay.
Depending on their capability, that's
yes.
The way they're So some devotees say that, oh, you know, Krishna, you give the empowerment and
Yeah, he can do anything he likes, but what's that got to do with us?
Well, if he wants you to do the service...
That's if he wants you to do, but what's happening is the person who's saying this wants you to do.
So that's not really true.
It's true, but it's up to the Lord to make it true.
But it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, it happens whenever it's supposed to happen.
Okay, but it's not like a common phenomenon.
It depends upon where you are.
In the holy dharma?
No, it's about the mentality.
Okay. So you have to be...
So devotees do amazing things all the time. And that's by the Lord's grace.
Okay.
So if it's a matter of I can't do this, but it's something they could do... Then you point out, by the Lord's mercy, you can do this.
But why wouldn't the Lord want one to do something? Why wouldn't
he? It's a matter. What has it got to do with his wanting? Why is it now his fault?
No, it's not. But how does he choose who to empower and who not? Why doesn't he just empower everyone?
You never heard of the eeny, meeny, miny, mo, how you say, formula. Vaikuntha roulette.
It'd be great if everyone just did like
chanting one name of the Lord is awesome service. Anything that connects with the Lord is awesome. Right? What does that mean? What does awesome mean?
Nothing going wrong in your service and everything going favorably towards...
That's called no obstacles. Awesome means it generates awe. It's so great, people go, wow, this is amazing. That's what awesome means. Of course, generally awesome is used by those who don't have a great vocabulary. So they won't know its etymological meanings to things. No, I'm just saying is that the Kohesis is not appreciated what it means. No, but why is it big service is the important thing?
I'm not saying
so the little things aren't important.
No, but successfully...
But what? How do you, what's success?
What you're trying to do for the Lord... actually happening.
But what are you trying to do for the Lord?
Well, just say you're trying to organize some event and then the event, like everybody comes and they all get lots of benefit or you're trying to give something.
But what is the benefit? What is the benefit?
Well, they all make advancement.
Well, how do they make advancement?
By being favorable, by being introduced to chanting or by...
And what's favorable?
Well, they want to become devotees.
Okay, so that's the point you want to do.
Yeah,
so does that mean that the externals need to be awesome for that?
Well, if you're having an event and it starts,
then everybody comes inside and sits around and chants Hare Krishna. You know, instead of going out and frolicking through the grass and, you know, everything going into slow motion and that, and, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Okay, well, I can't find a good example right now, but there are times when this...
Really? I saw another. It's like that, how do you say? The shoe is on the other foot.
Maharaj, you know what I mean?
Generally, I can never find an example that works for you.
Okay, just forget my question.
No. What you're catching is that you're saying is that the externals themselves are the cause of the bhakti. You understand? But they're not. They are something to help. Does that make sense? In other words, we want to expose the maximum amount of people to the maximum amount of Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
That's what we're trying to do. Then you use whatever facilities can do that. Does that make sense? But it's not that the facilities went well. That is the important thing, is that people became God conscious. It's just like, here, get them. Yeah, now the shoe went back on the other foot. I was going to say, okay. Yeah, probably neither of these examples will work, but hey, we'll try. Okay? You have a bunch of parents, they go to the third grade music recital of their kid. Okay? After the recital, it went well, they all come out with smiles. Okay? Okay. Now, at another time, these same parents, they're going out for some, you know, high-class place for some philharmonic, you know, how you say? Program. Concert. Yes. After that, they're coming out with smiles on their face. One was extremely well-rehearsed and sophisticated. The other one was not. So it's not about the externals. Does that make sense? But, to the best of your ability, in the situation you're in, you'll try to create the best facility. But the facility is a medium. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But I'll ask you when I have a better example. I totally understand.
But it's not about the example.
No, because I'm talking about something else.
You're talking about something else altogether. Absolutely something completely different.
Yes.
Okay, so when you figure out what you're talking about, then you let us know. Okay. Yes.
Can we say that neophytes, they very much depend on the situation they're in?
Yes, neophytes depend, because the neophytes identifying with the body and mind. Right? And so, therefore, when all that goes nicely, then they're comfortable. But when they identify as serving Krishna, then just being absorbed in service to Krishna, that's what's important. You know, it's just like... Okay. And in the evening, then they Radharani and all her associates are sitting all around. You know, they're discussing things, playing music, doing different things like that. All nice, interacting with Radharani directly. Now, because this is just spending time until you can go out with Krishna. But to be able to go out with Krishna, there must be, you know, going to bed and all those kind of arrangements have to be made. But to make those arrangements, you're not actually with Srimati Radharani. Right? So now, the main group is sitting with Srimati Radharani, but a few, they leave that assembly and go make arrangements for the next pastime. But you could look at it, well, how is this favorable? Because they're not getting that direct interaction with Radharani. But actually, that's the mood what Radharani wants. Is that?
Yeah.
Does that work?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the thing is that it's not about it's not about the externals. Well, we'll generally take it. Oh, if we get to be directly there, then that's more important. But it's actually doing that which pleases the person is the most important. So for us, when we see the externals are going nicely, then we think everything's going nicely. And on one level it is, because that's what we're working with. But actually it's Krishna's pleasure that is the... is the real symptom. You know, like Krishna... Duryodhana is offering Krishna a royal meal. Vidura is offering him chapatis and some spinach. But the one is actually to please Krishna, and the other is to please... Duryodhana is just looking at it from political alliance. So that's the whole point. As long as the externals are the important thing to us, we have to be engaged in something special. You know, like Prabhupada said, we're Westerners. We think in external. So he said, if we don't build a big temple, what's the meaning of being Westerners? Right? You know, the locals can sit down under a tree and chant Hare Krishna, and they're fine. So therefore, according to the nature, that's what you express. But it's not that these others don't do big things. But they're not doing big things because they need to engage their conditioning. They're doing big things because they have the ability to do it. Does that make sense? We have to do something big because we need to feel we're doing something big. Right? Others are doing something big because they're doing something for Krishna, and by nature that's what they do. Does that make sense? So all we're doing is switching the mentality. Like that. That's the whole thing that we're trying to get at, is adjusting that mentality. Because we're always looking at, well, what do I have to adjust externally? Rather than, no, it's the mentality that has to be adjusted. But if we're attached to the externals, therefore we, you know, just like you want to get, you know, the animal to go from point A to point B. He does not want to go. But you put down a little bit of food at intervals, he goes. Right? So for him, the food's important. For you, getting him to the other place is important. But it's been the same activity. Okay? Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
In England, we have this thing called Weekend Warriors, where a lot of the brahmacharis go out and distribute books and Harinam and stuff like that.
So I thought you were going to say, on the weekends they get on their Harley and go driving to Scotland or something. Yeah.
That's only when there's no like marathons going on.
Oh, okay. Okay.
No, but we were like in, I think it was Reading, and it's going well and it's going on, and suddenly it just starts pouring down. But we're
pouring
there.
Down mercy.
Well, water initially.
Okay.
And
wait a minute. That's like saying I'm in the ocean, it's wet. You said the word England.
Yeah. You understand.
Yes.
So we continue the Harinam because we don't have anywhere to go. But everywhere along the shops, people are standing to get out of the rain. And there comes a point where you just can't get any wetter, so we just stop caring about it. And the Harinam actually turns out pretty crazy. And then when we're done, we get an awesome response because everybody's like, these guys must be totally transcendental because we're all hiding from the rain and they just don't care.
Yeah.
So we were very, very successful after that. So in that sense, a seemingly unfavorable external turns out to be very, very favorable.
Yes, nice. Does that make any sense?
Yes, that was very nice.
Okay, found an example, okay, thank you.
I just thought about what I was talking about earlier, but I'm conscious of what I want to.
Let's just get to the essence.
Okay. So I have this desire of Krishna conscious becoming successful and filling Srila Prabhupada's mission and Mata's mission. So I'm wondering, like, actually Krishna consciousness at the moment is quite small, and why is it that there's not people like so empowered as Srila Prabhupada, and you know, they're making it so big, they're able to preach like non-stop and not sleep so much and just travel around all the time.
But what was the effect of Prabhupada's, what is the specialness? Okay, so that means anybody can do that. That's the real point. It's up to Krishna what it looks like externally. Does that make sense? Yes, but he's a special personality that he does those things. It's not. See, if.
But why can't we all be special?
Because everybody is special. But why do you take special has to look like that? So then they would say, why isn't everybody special and is like Radharani? What do you do if you have, you know, 1 million Radharanis? Okay? The point is there's a mission. Everybody does what they need to do within it. Because the point is all these temples are open, but who opened the temples? You understand? Because the devotees, the prophet inspired, they opened the temples. You understand? So it's a matter of if you're Krishna conscious, you can make others Krishna conscious. So it's not about the externals. Externals are a symptom. But that's not the actual main point. Does that make sense? Rupa Goswami built a temple that's probably, you know, one of the most amazing architectural buildings in the world. And Govindaji lived there for a short time. Rupa Goswami never actually saw it finished. And then he lived there for some time, and then after that he left and went to Jaipur. You know, and what he's living in there, you know, you'd never really call that a temple. You know what I'm saying? And then and then 4/5 of that temple was dismantled. So that means for Krishna, it's not about the externals. It's about the endeavor. So it's there because the devotee wanted to build it for the Lord, and so the Lord accepts it. But it's not about the building. It's about the desire to do that. So according to your nature, you do something. If you're able to do something big, then you should do something big for Krishna. If you can do something small, you do that for Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Okay. Yes. These four devotees prayed to the Lord that although they might go to hell because they had cursed devotees, they might not forget the service of the Lord. The transcendental loving service of the Lord is performed in three ways: with the body, with the mind, and with words. Here the sages pray that their words may always be engaged in glorifying the Supreme Lord. One may speak very nicely with ornamental language. One may be expert at controlled grammatical presentation, but if one's words are not engaged in the service of the Lord, they have no flavor and no actual use. So even though it's very, very nice, means exact, you know, grammatically or ornamentally, very beautiful, very attractive, like that, very awesome. Yeah. You know, so that, but until it's connected to the Lord, it's no use. It doesn't have any meaning. So that's the point. So they're saying that their language may always be connected to the Lord. The example is given here of tulsi leaves. The tulsi leaf is very useful even from the medicinal or antiseptic point of view. It is considered sacred and is offered to the lotus feet of the Lord. The tulsi leaf has numerous good qualities, but if it were not offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, tulsi could not be of much value or importance, right? Then she'd end up like her cousin working in a restaurant. Right? The holes of the ears are very small and can be filled with any insignificant sound. So how can they receive as great a vibration as the glorification of the Lord? The answer is that the holes of the ears are like the sky. As the sky can never be filled up, the quality of the ear is such that one may go on pouring in vibrations of various kinds. Yet it is capable of receiving more and more vibrations. The devotee is not afraid of going to hell if he has the opportunity to hear the glories of the Lord constantly. This is the advantage of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. One may be in any condition, but God gives him the prerogative to chant Hare Krishna. In any condition of life, if one goes on chanting, he will never be unhappy. There's one devotee, I can't remember if it was Malaysia or Indonesia, something over there, that they became a devotee, and I think their parents were quite influential and all that. They didn't appreciate it, so they got them, and I think they were put in an insane asylum to try to cure them of this devotional disease. And they couldn't get them to forget about Krishna. So then they tried one extreme thing where they just gave them some, medicine that just wiped out their memory totally. So their idea was is they won't remember anything. And so then they'll just start over again and train them as they please. You know? And so they did that. They forgot absolutely everything, but they would sit there and chant Hare Krishna. That's the only thing they remembered. Yeah, so then they just figured, okay, well, this is a lost cause.
Is that available for us?
Huh? I'm not sure. You'd have to talk to them.
Bedtime three.
Okay. Get a discount. Jiva Goswami analyzes the quality of the Kumara's vision in Priti Sandarbha, Anucheda 92. Although they certainly experience rati, and although they feel the happiness of spiritual bliss, because they do not have the conception that, quote, the Supreme Lord is mine, end quote, the devotees whose devotion is mixed with jnana bhaktas, experience only ordinary love for the Supreme Lord. Their feelings of love for the Lord are seen in the following words of Srimad Bhagavatam 3:15:49. So here's just pointing out, one is we're seeing from the side of the greatness of it, their devotional position, but then at the same time the acharyas are pointing out how then there's realization beyond what the four kumaras are showing. Right? Does that make sense? So, yes.
What is ordinary love for the Supreme Lord?
Ordinary love. But everybody's got love for this. Everybody on the platform of love of God, what they all got.
Just to make sure.
What it means is ordinary in that there's no special qualities of it, because it's just a generic affection based on appreciation. No. Well, I mean, you do have these devotees in Vaikuntha, but even Vaikuntha, there's a sense of possession. Right here, but here there's no sense of possession. Because in the platform of Gyan, that's the main principle, is to give up all attachment, that you have no sense of perception. Does that make sense? So he's saying definitely they have rati. So they're experiencing the emotions and everything like that, but it just touches that love of God. It doesn't. You don't see these others like these other devotees. You have this sneha and all these other flavors that come up and add variety to the relationship. Because here, the relationship is only expressed in that basic way of just appreciation. In shanta, yes. Does that make sense? Because there has to be some sense of my Lord or something like that for dasi to stuff. Does that make sense? O Lord, we pray that you let us be born in any hellish condition of life, just as long as our hearts and minds are always engaged in the service of your lotus feet. Our words are made beautiful by speaking of your activities, just as tulsi leaves are beautified when offered unto your lotus feet, and as long as our ears are always filled with the chanting of your transcendental qualities. The four Kumaras headed by Sanaka speak this prayer of love, raga. Still, the raga they feel is not direct raga. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has two features. One, his features Brahman, and two, his features the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. In general, the devotees are of two kinds. One, neophyte devotees, tatastha, and devotees who are personal associates, parikara, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? So tatastha means until one's come to the point of being an associate, you come to the point of prema, like this, then the tendency is one is in between, right? Because tatastha means it's in between prema and material, right? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically our position. We're tatastha because there is the element we're endeavoring for prema, but there's still the residual, material conditioning left from being in the material world, right? Once one comes to prema, then one is no longer functioning as tatastha. We'll be tatastha shakti. But the example is the iron and fire. It acts like fire, not like iron.
What?
Yes.
Paramatma is not a...
Because Paramatma is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, where you're not seeing him with his associates. That's why it says localized. Because there's only two features, it's personal and impersonal. It's just whether, if you're appreciating the pastimes of the person of the personal, then you have Bhagavan. If you only understand the person, than the Paramatma. Does that make sense? So that's why we can see is that in general, most on the platform of religions, they only understand up to Paramatma. They don't understand Bhagavan because it has both the personal and impersonal mix. Right? Because Paramatma, what does he do? Where does he live? Right? He's just in the heart. As Kiradakshai Vishnu, he lives on the... that's Bhagavan.
So here Paramatma would be under the header of Brahman.
Yes. That's why Brahman and Paramatma, these are the concepts that people have in the material world. Yes. They're not material concepts, but they're as far as people have within the material world. Like that, through your analyzation and that, you can have some understanding. But to understand Bhagavan, that's only by the Lord's mercy. And that means his mercy on the personal platform.
Yes.
Right, so that means when you deal with him on a personal platform, you get realization on that. You just deal with him as a force, or as the, you know, the Lord or the Creator, Maintainer, Destroyer. Then you'll get up to Brahman and Paramatma. So he reciprocates how you. So it's also mercy that you can understand Brahman, but you're only dealing with him as Brahman.
Yes.
Is that?
Yes.
Does that work?
Yes.
Yeah. Some of the neophyte Tathasta devotees take pleasure in the Brahman feature of the Lord. These devotees are situated in Shantaras. Other neophyte devotees love the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his personal associates, but have not yet themselves become personal associates of the Lord. The causes that attract one to become a personal associate of the Lord and results of becoming a personal associate of the Lord are both absent amongst the neophyte devotees who take pleasure in the Brahman feature of the Lord. Right? Because there has to be the attraction, and then there has to actually attain that position. So there's a process. There's attraction and a process. So that attraction and the process are missing in those who are in this mixed, the Brahman feature. Devotees who are interested in the Brahman feature. Does this make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's why we don't really talk about it much. Because it's not... You know, I mean this. We're talking about it, but it's not that you have to go on and on about it. Because it's just a fact.
Yes.
But now, understanding the attraction to the Lord and becoming an associate of the Lord, that's what we talk about, because that's what we're trying to do. For these reasons, these neophyte devotees are not attracted to become personal associates of the Lord. The causes that help one attracted to become a personal associate of the Lord are of two kinds. The idea that the Lord, Supreme Lord, is mine, and two, perception of the various limbs and features, upaga of the Lord, amongst which is included perception of the Lord's impersonal Brahman feature. That the devotees attracted to the impersonal Brahman feature do not think the Supreme Lord is mine has already been shown. Neither do these devotees have any direct perception of the limbs of the Supreme Lord's body. However, these devotees do have knowledge of the impersonal Brahman, which is one of the Supreme Lord's secondary features, upaga. From this knowledge, a Brahman knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead may eventually come. Right, so you can move to that position, just as we see the Kumaras. They're starting on that level and only appreciating the level on that platform. But we see they're coming by association with Brahma and hearing about it, and now seeing the Lord, then they're coming to that position. In this way, these devotees may eventually become attracted to the personal feature of the Lord. This truth is seen in the words of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.10. All different varieties of Atmaramas, those who take pleasure in Atma, or spirit self, especially those established on the path of self-realization, though freed from all kinds of material bondage, desire to render unalloyed devotional service under the personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls. Because the liberated soul is only attracted to transcendence. And they can be attracted to the personality of Godhead. That means his qualities are transcendental. So that is a possible. It says all varieties of Atmaramas. So it's not just only the devotee Atmaramas, but also the impersonal Atmaramas. They can also become attracted because on the platform of transcendence, they can appreciate the deeper understanding. Right? They have a taste of Brahmananda, but they can see that this taste of Brahmananda is far superior to just this general taste. Okay. These devotees may also become attracted to the Supreme Lord directly. This is seen in the following words of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right, so either through his qualities, hearing about him, and that, or directly, 3:15:43. When the breeze carrying the aroma of tulsi leaves from the toes of the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead entered the nostrils of those sages, they experienced a change both in body and mind, even though they were attached to the impersonal Brahman understanding. Because otherwise, nothing material could cause a change in their body or mind. Being transcendental, there's nothing that will create an emotional response that would give a physical or a mental change. So that they're getting it now means being transcendental. That could only happen if the experience is transcendental. In this way, the impersonalist may renounce the impersonal idea. Then they attain the results of becoming attracted to the Lord. The Supreme Lord. The result is they become wrapped in meditation on the Lord. Eventually, they may also see the Supreme Lord directly. Right? So then one can move up. But the basic point is on this, rati will be experienced, but you're just basically touching on prema. But it's not going much deeper. So if one becomes attracted and goes further, then naturally it will develop. Right? So does that make sense? So basically we could say is Shantaras is the only ras being in it that one might be from there attracted into a higher rasa. But if one is in any of the other four rasas, one generally wouldn't, because it's already dynamic. The relationship is established. Right? Because here in Shanta, it's not a relationship as such. It's just an appreciation. Because relationship means there's a sense of mind. Right? Yes. The four Kumaras conclude their prayers. O Lord, we therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto your eternal form as the personality of Godhead, which you have so kindly manifested before us. Your supreme eternal form cannot be seen by unfortunate, less intelligent persons, but we are so much satisfied in our mind and vision to see it. Verse 50. Srila Prabhupada describes the gratitude of the Kumaras in his purport to verse 50. The four sages were impersonalists in the beginning of their spiritual life, but afterwards, by the grace of their father and spiritual master Brahma, they understood the eternal spiritual form of the Lord and felt completely satisfied. In other words, the transcendentalists who aspire to the impersonal Brahman, or localized Paramatma, are not fully satisfied and still hanker for more, even if they are satisfied in their minds, right? Because just like that, it's not about experiencing Brahmananda. They want to be Brahman. Because they're wanting more, because that realization doesn't give them much. Therefore, they talk about becoming Brahman. But why, if you're already Brahman, why would you have to become Brahman? So it's just the idea is it makes you satisfied because you think, I'll get more. Right? I'm getting something from just being, you know, a spark, but when I become Brahman, that's when it starts happening.
Yeah.
You understand? So that's the thing they're hankering, because they're not satisfied. Right? But the devotee is satisfied. Satisfied meaning there's no other place to go. Does that make sense? Just like in the material world, you like something, but after a while you adjust that because it's not satisfying. Right? So you keep moving. But on the spiritual platform, the devotee is satisfied because there's no other place to go but the lotus feet of the Lord. But within that, he's not satiated in that he can go on unlimitedly enjoying that absorption. Right? While in the material world, even if there's something you really like, there's a limit how much you can do it. Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
So when it says transcendentalist who aspire for impersonal Brahman, it's not really transcendentally situated.
No, they're counted as transcendentalists. Mm-hmm. But the problem is on transcendental time, they're considered in a temporary position. On material time, the amount they'll be in Brahman, it's not even worth trying to count here.
Yeah.
You know, okay. Like that. So
we won't see them back. Like.
Yeah, you're talking about lifetimes and lifetimes of Brahma. So many creations of the Mahatattva. So, you know, it's just, you can't get into the numbers there. You know, you're already working in the trillions to deal with Brahmas. So now you add on quite a few of those.
Yes.
You know, it kind of gets out of hand.
Yes.
Yes.
The idea of becoming, like, total Brahman is still a mundane idea.
Yes, it is a mundane idea. Because if that's all you... It's a mundane idea, but you're dealing with transcendence. But since you're only dealing partially with transcendence, it's not a complete understanding. That's why you can only have that understanding within material world. In the spiritual world, you have a complete understanding. There's God, you know, as a person, and he also has his impersonal feature. You know, it's just like there's a person and he has a house. But what we're saying here is they can only understand there's a house. They can't understand there's a person in the house.
Right. Yeah.
Like that. Is that?
Yeah, I'm just thinking in this connection, then devotees asking about changing their rasa, it's a projection
of material
consciousness on the spiritual.
Yes.
You know.
Spiritual, yes. Yes, because why would you want to change? You have something good, you want to change, you know?
We don't see it from Brihad Bhagavatam Rita. Nobody's changing.
No, nobody's changing. Even though they're talking about there's something higher, they're not changing. You know, it's like if you give your wife a 10-carat, you know, diamond ring, does she want to change it?
No.
See? Right. So that's the thing. So if you're saying, no, but if I'm in this Ras, can I change? Why would you want to do that? So that means they're looking at it, like you're saying, from the material point of view, is I'm doing this, but there's not a full satisfaction. I want the options open that I could do anything. You know, it's just, generally when people are dealing with options, it's not that they want to do all of them. They just want to have options.
Yes.
You know, it's just there's a satisfaction knowing there's 10 things I can do, though I will only pick one. You know, and most likely it's out of these particular three. But, you know, to have the other seven is good, because at least I can tell my friends I have it.
Yes, that's the main thing.
Even if they are satisfied in their mind, still transcendentally, their eyes are not satisfied. Right? Because sometimes they may be talking to an impersonal, they'll say, no, I'm satisfied. But it's not all, everything is satisfied. That's the problem. You know, but it's in themselves because they've attained their goal. Just like there's some, you get a material goal, you're satisfied for some time. You know, at least a moment, right?
Yes.
Like that. But here, because you're dealing with Brahman, that moment will be a little longer. You're dealing a different time span. But they still won't be fully satisfied because the living entity is imbued with senses. Right? It's not that they only have senses in the material world, they have senses in the spiritual. So now, but their senses won't be satisfied because they're not seeing the Lord, hearing about the Lord, you know, talking about the Lord, doing different activities with their senses to serve the Lord. So that part will remain unsatisfied. Even though that they, okay, understand I'm Brahman, I'm the soul, there'll be a satisfaction there. That's why they're called Atmaramas. But it's not a full level of Atmarama. It will, how do you say it? It will create dissatisfaction at some point.
Right. And it will go away.
And, yeah, and that realization will go away. So
it's an incomplete understanding of principle and detail.
Yes. So, yes, because the principle is not fully... They've understood the Brahman aspect, but not the source of the Brahman. Right? So, what they're understanding is real, but it's not complete. You know? That's what we say, just like the six philosophies.
Yeah.
They all are dealing with elements of reality, but none of them are complete. Right? Only when you get to Vaishnava Vedanta, that's complete. But as soon as such persons come to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are satisfied in all respects. In other words, they become devotees and want to see the form of the Lord continually. It is confirmed that Brahma Samhita, the one who has developed transcendental love of Krishna, by smearing his eyes with the ointment of love, sees constantly the eternal form of the Lord. Right? So because of that devotion, they'll always see. So that's another point of before I was discussing, well, how if you're in a bad situation? No, but if you're always seeing. So that's why this would be the missing link in our previous examples, because we're only talking about the situations. right? But why is that situation not a disturbance even for the materialist? It's that if there's someone in their mind that they're thinking of, then it's not a problem. All right? So all the endeavor, all the work that goes into it is not a problem because they're thinking of a person and that relationship with the person. Therefore, any change or anything in the environment just changes how you deal with it so that you get the satisfaction of that person.
Bilba Mangaltako.
Like Bilba Mangaltako. Okay. In what respect?
Situation was really bad. He didn't care. He was swimming and going to see
the... Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yes, that's a very good example. You understand this? Mm-hmm. Bilba Mangaltako. Okay. He wants to visit his friend, right? And but now it is, you know, there's a huge storm outside. But he still doesn't matter. He's just thinking of this girl and going. And then he comes to the river, and it's completely stormy and this and that and waves. And it doesn't bother him. Yeah, you just have to get across this, you know, and then he can see the girl. And so then going in there, then it's very difficult. So then he comes across a dead body and holds on to that, and with that floats across. And it doesn't matter to him. Hey, you know, it's just, you know, because he's seeing the girl. What does the dead body matter? Yes. Then when he gets there, there's nothing. So he has to climb up the creepers and everything. Then he gets there, and this whole time the girl's watching, right? And the girl knows who she is, right? And so she's thinking, if this guy had that determination to understand God, you know, then he would be a great devotee. But he's just wasting this on, you know, being devoted to her like that. So then in this way, she became his Vartma Pradarsha guru.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's a very good point. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes.
So according to this Brahma Samhita verse, devotees, even Paramatma, they see Shyama Sundar within
yes,
their heart.
Yes, they see Shyama Sundar within their heart. So another, even you see the aspect of Brahman, but it's Krishna who's that aspect of Brahman. That's the point, is that when we're talking about this Brahman and Paramatma realization, we're not talking from the platform of the realization had by those who only have that. Mm-hmm. We're talking about it from the position of the devotees. Because Parabrahman means that you understand the person who these features of Paramatma and Brahman come from.
Yeah.
So even you see Krishna is the strength in the pillar, but it's Krishna who is the strength in the pillar. Is that he's the one who has all strength, and therefore then you remember the person. But you're able to see that wherever you focus.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. The four sages felt so much obliged to the Lord that they offered their respectful obeisances unto him again and again. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, purport to verse 50. The Kumaras are famous as being fixed in realization of Brahman and are known as the jewels in the crown amongst all Atmaramas. Shruti says, right, so if they're coming to this understanding, then that means there's no other Atmaramas. It's not like, well, what about this? What about that one? No, they're the, because any other Atmaramas you're going to hear about, then they're coming from the secondary creation. Right? But they're coming from secondary and primary, so you don't have anybody else like them.
No.
Right?
Yes.
What was that? Prakriti and Vikriti, right? Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Vikriti and Prakriti. Yeah. I think the Vikriti or Vikrita was the first, the primary, and Prakriti,
yeah.
Prakriti is the second. Yeah. Like that. So they're from both. So you're not going to get any higher. So then using them as the example, then you don't have to use anybody else.
It covers.
Yeah, it covers. Shruti says, I offer my respects to Sanat Kumara, who has destroyed all defects and shows the Supreme Brahman beyond ignorance. Chandogya Upanishad 7:26. When such sages offer prayers of this nature, one must understand the superiority of the bliss and worship of the Lord over the bliss of Brahman. This means that the Lord's form, name, qualities, clothing, devotees, and abodes are naturally all spiritual in form. Form, name, quality. Oh no, we said that. In form, yes. If they were not of this nature, bhakti could not be successful. Because otherwise, how I would bhakti work? Because of that absorption in the Lord. That's why it's so effective. Because the other is simply you have the intellect to work with. You're not technically working much with the mind. right? Other than to go on a nice intellectual path. But the body's not engaged, the mind's not engaged, the senses aren't engaged. So you're only dealing with the middle section of rationale.
Yes.
Right? So it's the getting information and its application aren't part of the process. Right?
Yeah.
So it's very limited what you're working with. But because the Lord has all these different aspects of name, form, qualities, pastime, therefore, now all the mind and senses, everything can be engaged in the Lord's service. So everything becomes perfect. So very quickly it's dynamic and it's something that can be maintained. Because the soul has all these aspects. So the soul can be completely transcendentally situated on the devotional platform and be satisfied. While the other, you're only partially engaging your nature.
Is it,
yes.
Is it just enough so that you can protect your false ego?
It's just enough to that I'm the controller and enjoyer.
Yeah. And then everything else is just...
Yeah, you get rid of everything else, but you leave that one. So you can...
It's very difficult to deal with.
Yes. Well, that's why Prabhupada points out in the yoga system, the last snare of Maya is that I am the Supreme Lord. So they take I am that means I am that personality. Rather than I am that, I am spiritual, like the Lord.
Yes. Yes.
So that remain, leaves us with I am the Supreme Controller and the Supreme Enjoyer. Because there's nobody in anything that will, even the impersonalists that won't argue that the Vishnu is the Supreme Controller and Enjoyer. But they're just looking at whether that's within the realm of illusion or not.
Yeah.
Right? So that's there. So they want to maintain that. So it still has that mundane aspect. Yeah.
Yes.
Later in the statements of Kapila, these items are described as nirguna, without material qualities. Bharata Tatparya says bhakti is the form of eternal bliss for the liberated souls. Okay, bhakti is the form of eternal bliss for the liberated soul. So that bliss takes the form of bhakti. Right? Right? Because bliss must have some expression. So that expression is bhakti. So when the bhakti is not the expression, then it's only that impersonal realization. Right? So this is where we're making the difference, is that you have... Why do we make this difference? Because we want to show that there is... Because we just go, there's material and there's... prema. But the problem is we have to go through a stage in between, which is the neutral state. And because we're taking as prema is happiness and eternality and everything like that, that's also in the liberated state. So we could mistake the liberated state as bhakti. So we have to distinguish between the two so we don't make that mistake. But at the same time, it's not about liberation, it's about bhakti.
Yes.
So we're leaving this principle of going from the material to bhakti, but that we don't get stuck in our natural neophyte position as tathasva.
Yes.
Right? That we'll go beyond that into prema. Does that make sense? That's why these fine points are being brought out. Because otherwise, they'll just, oh, you go to spiritual, you'll be eternally happy. But that's not actually... That's Brahmananda's look at that. Because what do they got? Their goal is to be eternally happy. The devotee is, I will eternally serve the Lord. Does that make sense? So they're intending that it's bhakti. So because its intent is bhakti, they're going to progress. Right? So them saying that and the impersonal saying that are different, but still they should know the difference. Otherwise, how will they focus on serving the Lord as their main focus? Does that make sense?
So the eternally happy is just the secondary for the...
It's just the secondary aspect. Because then if you're eternally happy, what's that going to look like? What are the symptoms of your eternally happy? Right? You'll perform devotional service. Right? That's why then the secondary features are important. Right? So the forms and actions of the devotees in devotional service are important. But because they're the expressions of the bhakti that they have. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So then we get all these things get jumbled up. You know? So all it is the acharyas are pulling them apart and analyzing, but they're all aspects of that one position of pure devotional service. But you have to know what's where, what's primary, what's secondary. Right?
Yes.
So, yeah. Shruti also confirms this with bhakti is performed before liberation, and it is seen after liberation as well. So that means it's the constant feature. Yes. Being liberated or not, that's the temporary. Brahma Sutra 4.1.12. In Madhvacharya's commentary on this sutra, he quotes Sauparna Shruti. The Lord is worshipped at all times. He is worshipped by the liberated and by those not liberated. In relation to the great devotees such as Prahlad and Bali, Vishnu Purana says, in the lower planets, even those who are liberated do not have bhakti. Okay. Yeah. Because on the lower planets, generally, they're not interested in devotional service. That's why they're on the lower planets, not on the higher planets. Right? Because otherwise, for that much piety, if they were inclined towards the Lord, they'd be in the heavenly planets. But they have the piety, but no interest in devotion to the Lord. Therefore, they end up on the lower planets. Yes. Therefore, you have, you know, your Brahmins, your sages, your all these different personalities down there. But they're not interested in God consciousness, so there is no bhakti. So,
yes.
Yeah.
We're still not sure about how their sadhana is working.
How they're sadhana, because they follow the Vedic culture.
Worshipping deities?
Or? Even if they're worshipping deities, but the point is they're not interested in the personal aspect. All it is that the Shastra says, you do this, you get this benefit. They're doing it. They're smart. Right?
So they find out some bogus.
It's just like this. Let's say if I say, you know, you have the Shastra, the scriptural evidence says, you take money invested in a business, you know, proposition, from that you can get profit. Okay?
Yes.
Now, I'm coming along with the modern viewpoint is, oh, that's so archaic, you know, that people have been doing that for thousands of years. We're different. We're new. We do whatever we like. So without investment, I'm going to make profit. Is it going to work?
Let's see. I don't think so.
No. Yeah, so that's the problem is that... Yeah. These smart ones know by following the Vedic culture, if I'm a gross materialist, the only way to get what you want is to follow the Vedic culture.
And we even see in modern society, they're very regulated, those big demons.
The people who are consistently successful are very regulated in the lifestyle. Much of the qualities we talk about, they have. They're sitting there in front of some guy comes in, and insulting them from top to bottom. They say nothing. Right? You know, why? Because by saying something, there's no profit. Right? So by being quiet, there'll be a profit. Because the guy, you know, will have said his thing, he walks out, and then after he walks out of the room, you pick up the phone, call the proper people, and then he's got problems.
He's not talking anymore.
Yes. Parishishtam. References from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Bhagavad Arkamrita Mala. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns the following verses. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.15, 14 through 16 to Bhagavad Arkamrita Mala. Chapter 4, entitled The Factual Truth of Krishna. Bhagavat Surup Tattva, which is within the Sambandha section of the Thakur's book. 14. The Vaikuntha planets... All the residents, in the Vaikuntha planets, all the residents are similar in form to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They all engage in devotional service to the Lord without desires for sense gratification. In the Vaikuntha planets is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original person and who can be understood through the Vedic literature. He is full of the uncontaminated mode of goodness, with no place for passion or ignorance. He contributes religious progress for the devotees. In those Vaikuntha planets, there are many forests which are very auspicious. In those forests, the trees are all desire trees. And in all seasons, they are filled with flowers and fruits because everything in Vaikuntha planets is spiritual and personal. Right? So here now we have the understanding of the Lord, his associates, and the place that he lives in. Mm-hmm. So everything is personal. It means all the trees, and they're all conscious and all personal. Right? The devotees are all personal. And the Lord is then the Supreme Person. Right? So that's the whole point, is that it's the personal is the whole point, because up to now we've been predominantly dealing with, from the Vaishnava personal point of view, but with the impersonal understanding. Right? From the second canto before this third canto. It's been trying to get us to understand how to see the material world not as material world, but as spiritual. Not meaning that it's the spiritual world, but it's the Lord's potency, so it's Brahman. That way it breaks all attachments and everything and attractions that we may have here. But now with this, then we're seeing that that is now being converted to, that the personal form is the better aspect. Right? It's always been talked about. Mm-hmm. But now we're showing how that transition is made. Does this make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then from here it'll keep going until we get to, you know, the eternal associates of the Lord in the eternal pastimes in 10th canto.
So more and more details will be put on.
Yes, more and more comes up. Because the point is you can put in facts, but we don't want all this additional information to simply be more facts. Right? Yes. We want it to actually be understood as what it is and the importance and depth of it. Yes. That's what we're trying to get to. That's the uniqueness. Yes. Does that make sense? Because otherwise the tendency is we're going to just do the same thing, add more on. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because otherwise you add in something, some far-out thing from some far-out Leela of Krishna, and intimate, never been heard before, and all this and that. But what happens? It just gets added in as more information.
Yes.
It's not actually what is the nature of that affection that's being expressed, Krishna's reciprocation with that, the taste that is there. What are these anubhavas that are experienced and all these different aspects like that? It's just another fact, nice story. And then the next day, oh, hey, did you hear this? Yeah, I already heard that. You know, it's kind of like that one story could keep, you know, one of the Rasikas busy for a long time. You know?
For us, the attraction is just the fact that we haven't heard
it. We haven't heard it. It's a new thing, yeah. You know, so that's all. So we're looking at it before from the material point of view is that we need variety just to keep interest. No, it's in the spiritual, because there's interest, then variety is generated. But here, we don't even get interest unless there's variety. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's... Does that work? Yeah? Yes, no?
I'm just thinking that when we preach to the public, if it's not entertaining, people don't even come.
Yeah, so that's why you have to have that element. But at the same time, in that entertainment, then you... That's why we're hearing from... someone is talking about Brahmananda. When they go out in Harinam, like that, you know, in the 60s, because you didn't have that many devotees, but you have, you know, 10, 15, 20 devotees. So it would be, you know, basically half men, half women. So when they go out, because they would stay at a particular spot, then when they get to the spot, then to get everyone in their position, then Brahmananda, because he was the temple president, he would say, okay, gopis in the front. So the men would stand in the back line, you know, with all the instruments and that, and the girls would stand in the front and do all the dancing and like that. So there's the same thing. You make it interesting. But at the same time, as they're hearing the holy name and all that. You know, or it's just like what we said, Indradyumna Maharaj would do in Paris. Is that they would dress up two devotees as Radha and Krishna or as the Panchatattva and have all kinds of flags and this, and then go down the street, you know, like this. They make it interesting. So then it's, you know, yeah, when you send out, you know, three new bhaktas that, you know, have two different colored socks and their kopis hanging out in the back of their dhoti and, you know, all that kind of stuff, it's not really attractive. So people are definitely getting the spiritual benefit, but it's not that they're thinking, hey, you know, could I do that? Yeah. So generally that, yeah. So that's why you want to, you combine the two. You know, to say, oh, we don't, that's just mundane, or that's all we do. So that's the problem, is fanatics means it's only about chanting, we couldn't care less about the externals. And then soft preaching means we only care about externals, we don't necessarily care about the chanting. You know, so you have to do both. The chanting is there, and the externals are that. Then
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandana ki. But people became devotees from those because it wasn't, they looked weird. But the mood was such that people thought it's just like, you know, that he was saying about the, being out in the rain. Who would think that that's it? But so if they were out there going through the rain and everybody looked miserable, then everybody would comment, these guys are fanatics.
Yeah.
But because they're in ecstasy there, and they're not in the rain, and they're not in ecstasy, and these guys are out in the rain in ecstasy, then they're thinking, what are these guys, you know, God, what are they doing? So that's the... So that's why even in the other, the externals aren't so good, but if the mood's right, people will take that part. You know, at least the intelligence ones.
Oh, yeah.
Like that, you know. And, you know, and if they're not, then it's not, even if you present it nicely, those who are not interested in devotional service or you know, something higher, they're going to criticize anyway.
Yeah.
So it's like, why bother trying to impress them? Because...
Even if you get them to the temple, it's just going to be dragging on and on.
Yeah, yeah. So it's never worth. That's why you see that those who are leaders in society consider what others are going to, how they're going to see it, but they don't really care. They do their own thing.
Right.
You know. Like I was reading something the other day. It was interesting. Is that there's a particular kind of fashion that was there in the Northeast universities. In America, the Ivy League universities, they had their own fashion. And it was basically a fashion that was anti-fashion. But it was fashionable, but it was anti-fashion. You know, they would do things that others would not do. You know, like wear shoes with no socks, or, you know, wear a pink tie. You know, or things like this, you know, that just no one else would do. They would do it. They'd do it tastefully. And so it was just in the universities. But then one of those you know, who grew up in that, you know, that environment became the president of America. Right? That was Kennedy. And so he was from that preppy background. And so he dressed like that as the president. And then from that, now that became the standard. Now you all see is that all these guys on that level, they all have a tie that's not black. And, you know, they throw in a little bit of something here and there. And when, you know, so, and then, so, like that. But now, technically, what he did didn't fit in. But because he liked doing that. And, you know, and it's not, and so then everybody else caught on. So that's a, you know, probably gives the example of Charlie Chaplin in that one film. So he goes out dancing, but when he gets up, he rips his tails, right? So they're like that. And so because of that, everybody's going to point and say, wow, he's stupid, look at him. So he just, you know, takes a girl, and he does so boldly and dynamically dancing that all the other people see that and think, you know, what's it? Maybe it's because of that. And that's the, so now it becomes the fashion. So all the other guys are ripping their coattails and dancing also like that, you know. So Prabhupada says, that's how you preach. You go out there and do it so powerfully and so uniquely that everybody will change to doing what we're doing. So this thing of fitting in, that is so lame. It is so lame. You know, like that. You know, I mean, you have to properly. It's like
it's
you wear what you. It's about, you know, you dress nicely as a devotee. You know, you don't look like a slob. You don't care. It's not that you. You know, yeah. We don't have. There's so many examples.
Yeah, we don't.
Yeah, we don't need to get into those.
Now you have this new term called normcore.
Normcore.
Hardcore normal.
Hardcore.
You're so normal that it's just, you know, you freak people out. Because everybody's trying to be unique in different ways and in the same way at the same time. So that becomes confusing. So now they got normcore. Right? They're just, you know, sweatpants and flip-flops and fleece jackets and just too much of that, you know, where any sane person would have a little bit of it, you know, because they're not so fanatic about it. But then you just go fanatic on being
normal. But you give it some time, and this will be now then
it keeps folding over, you know. It's just going back
you know, it's
and
just
forth,
like
back and forth.
You had the 50s culture, so what the hippies were doing in the 60s was so alternative to that.
Yeah.
But now, that what the hippies were doing, that's now mainstream culture, you know. And then what they were doing in the 50s, now that's weird.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
What to do?
80s, 90s, you see the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, no, it always does that. That's how the world works. Because there's all, it means you only have so many things, so it's already been chewed, so then, you know, you have to make something new about it, you know. And then it's fashionable. That's all. You know, before it was, you know, you took your own stuff, went into the organic shop, you had your own bags and that, because it's just there loose. Nothing's packed.
Right.
You bring your own stuff and you take it away. You know, so the common person would never do that. And now it's, you know, packaged nicely and, you know, with some, you know, some graphic designers design the whole thing. Now everybody can, you know, have that in their cart and
they
everybody have
whole organic supermarkets.
Oh, flax seeds.
Yeah.
That's kind of like, you know, that's, you know, horses eat flax seeds. You know?
Yeah. But it's organic.
It's organic. It's what did they call that? I can't remember. There's a something where it has all these particular, you know, kind of, I'd say, healthful substances in it. So it gives a name.
Biodynamic?
No, it's some other more far out kind of, you know, like vitamin kind of thing.
Okay.
Whatever.
Oh. Superfood?
Oh, that's there. Is there anything else in your cart?
Anything not...
You have other things in your cart?
Yeah. Only at the very bottom.
Yeah, you know, get your Cheerios and that, and put all the lettuce and that on top. Let your friend go first in the line. Yeah.
That's how the world works.
Yeah. That's how healthy food freaks work also. When no one's...
No one's watching.
Yeah. What kind of food? Yeah. How food freaky are they when no one's watching?
Yeah, exactly. There's a special cupboard somewhere in the house.
Yeah, yeah. And that, yeah, cupboard, the golden parachute cupboard. Or you're totally freaking out.
Yeah. It's kind of like a bulimia kind of thing, you know.